D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. I am live out at Assembly Food Hall across the street from Bridgestone Arena. You can catch me on the second floor on the south stage, and I'm up here all by my lonesome. I've always wanted a big stage all to myself, but here's someone who knows a thing or two about being on a big stage. Joining us on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider. Elliot, before we begin, I just want you to share something with our audience. So Sportsnet did a feature about you on your deadline day, a day in the life of Elliot Freeman on NHL trade deadline day. And they showed you walking to work, and they showed you getting your makeup done and your suit picked out and all of the things that you do to be on top of your game. And that at the end of the segment, you turned on your phone and you showed it to the camera. I want you to tell everybody listening how much screen time you had that day.
Yeah, it was 20 hours. It was. Now, I have to say that, Adam, this is a little bit in dispute. Now,
okay.
It could work because I did sleep for only 3 hours, but like I'm trying to figure out a little bit more about this because I just don't know if I stared at my phone for 20 hours straight. So like I'm like an Apple guy. I've got like I've got the phone. Normally I have an iPad. I didn't have it there with me. I have the Mac, like the iMac computer, and I wonder like does it all count as one? Like if they
that's a good question.
You're looking. Yeah, so that's one thing. Like, I'm not denying I had a lot of screen time that day, but I am wondering about this because the average that week was like 19, 20 hours. So I didn't know that that was possible. And the other thing, too, is that night when I slept for 3 hours the morning of the trade deadline, I fell asleep listening to a podcast. And when I woke up, it had gone through like three other podcasts because I guess I have continuous play on my phone. So I'm also wondering if they counted that as screen time because the podcasts were still playing, right? So I'm not saying it's a ridiculous number, but I am disputing how high this number actually is.
I think you're shortchanging it. I think the exact number when you showed it to the camera was 21 hours, 50 minutes. So it was nearly 22 hours, not just 20.
I thought it was closer to 21. Jeez, as I said, I called it pathetic, and I'm just, you know, I'm trying to make myself sound like a little less of a loser.
We need you to have one of those bags that you have when you go to a performance where it locks your phone in the bag while you're in the performance.
Yes.
You might need one of those. But the Predators, we went over some of the moves they made last week because we had you on right after the Predators traded Tommy Novak and Luke Schenn to the Pittsburgh Penguins. The only move the Predators made on deadline day was shipping out Mark Jankowski to the Carolina Hurricanes. I think our initial reaction was we were expecting more from the Predators considering the position they find themselves in the standings. Were there other deals that they could have made that were close that ultimately fell through?
I don't know how close they were, but I'm not surprised they didn't do too much more. excuse me a sec, Adam. Like, I don't know what else you could do from there. I mean, Novak, you know, I discussed on your show about a week before it happened that his name had started to get out there. I think Luke Schenn was kind of expected. Jankowski was kind of expected if there was interest. I think McCarron, if there had been interest, or Sisson, if there had been interest, maybe. But Barry had spoken to a lot of the guys that had just been signed. The guys with no move clauses didn't want to go anywhere. And also with Ryan O'Reilly in particular, I think that they had made it very clear that they were treating him as if he had a no move clause and he wasn't going anywhere unless he wanted to. Now, I do think that he was a name that people took pitches at. There were reports that New Jersey had asked about him. Like, I think a lot of people asked about him. The one I kind of wonder about, and I don't know how close it ever got, but Josh Norris, who was traded from Ottawa to Buffalo, there were a few teams looking at him, and I believe the Predators were one of them. And I think that Ottawa had asked about O'Reilly, But, you know, as I've said, O'Reilly, I don't think he wants to go. I think he's made it very clear that he wants to be part of the solution in Nashville. He signed with the Predators for a reason. And I think Nashville knew that. At the end of the day, he wanted to stay. So I don't know if it didn't happen because of O'Reilly or the two sides just couldn't work on a deal that made everybody happy. But I know they talked about it, but it obviously didn't happen in the end.
Elsewhere in the Central Division, we saw the Dallas Stars and Colorado Avalanche load up. The Dallas Stars splurged on Mikko Rantanen. The Colorado Avalanche brought in Brock Nelson to play behind Nathan MacKinnon. The Winnipeg Jets, they opted for more depth. They brought in Brandon Tanev and, of course, Luke Shen after the Penguins flipped him to Winnipeg. I'm just curious for your state of the arms race in the at the top of the Central Division, considering the moves that Colorado and Dallas made. And of course, although Winnipeg didn't make any splashy moves, they are the best team in the NHL.
Well, it wasn't for lack of trying. I think they, you know, Winnipeg had the biggest challenge Winnipeg has is that they're on a lot of no trade lists, so they're really limited sometimes in what they can do. But I thought they did a really nice job of plugging holes. Like, I think Shen plugged a hole for them that they had, and I think Brandon Tanev plugged a hole for them that they had. So you make do the best with what you've got, Adam. That first round series, because even, you know, Minnesota beat Colorado last night, so they moved a point closer, but as it stands right now, the first round series would be Dallas against Colorado, and they play each other on Sunday. That is going to be a ridiculous first round series. Like, just beyond ridiculous first-round series if that happens. And, you know, it's funny. I do 4 out of 5 days a week, I do a hit on our flagship station here in Toronto, and we were just talking about the playoff format. Like, one of the things I really would see the players pushing for as the CBA discussions begin soon, Adam, is that I think they're going to ask for a change in the playoff format. That we go back to 1-8 in each conference instead of what we're dealing with now. I think with teams like Dallas and Colorado, let's just say they play each other. It's going to be ridiculous if one of those two teams has first-round playoff loser next to each other. Like, that's not a first-round series. That could be the Stanley Cup final. And I don't know where that's going to go, but I could see the players definitely asking for it.
I think that is a great point, and I know every Predators fan has their mind immediately go back to 2018 when they had to play the Jets in the second round as the President's Trophy winner, and the Jets might have been the second or third best team in the league during the regular season. So I think you would have a lot of votes in Nashville to go back to the 1-8. No question about it, Elliot.
I think the players want it. Like, when you ask players these days, Willie, what they would like, if there's one thing they could change about the NHL, I wouldn't say it's unanimous, but I think it's the thing I hear the most is, let's go back to 1-8 in each conference. And by the way, Willie, I've heard you're really whining about the rain in California out there.
Oh, big time. Big time. And I've seen glimpses of the sun since we've been out here, but it's been raining. I mean, when does it rain in Southern California? What is going on? We've had two straight days of rain and 50-degree weather. This is nuts. But,
yeah,
hey, you can't have everything. You can't have everything.
That's right.
Elliot, let me ask you about Barry Trotz and what you saw. Adam asked you about, you know, holding on to some of the pieces that he did, and I think there's a good argument for that. His case was basically, for guys like Michael McCarron and Colton Sissons, I could get the same thing next year for what I could get this year, and if I traded them this year, I'd just be looking for guys who could replace them, and he thinks that it's more valuable to keep them for a year and then revisit it next year. But the one he took quite a bit of criticism was the Shen trade, where he turned it around, and so it really rests a lot on what you think of Michael Bunting. So Bunting is training with the team out here. There's a couple of days off. We may see him this weekend. For the first time in a Predator uniform. Tell us what you see from him. You watched him a lot closer than most of our fans, especially when he was playing his best in Toronto a couple years ago.
Well, I like Bunting as a player. I do. He's bounced around quite a bit, a little bit surprising to me. But he's an energetic guy. He will drive opponents crazy. I've always thought Michael plays very hard. I think he will bring an energy to your team that you kind of need. Like, he makes people crazy. Like, there was a run when he had in Toronto, like, everybody was mad at him. Every opponent, the referees, like, everybody was just mad at him. He makes people nuts. And I really like watching him. He plays hard. You know, sometimes Sheldon Keefe would tell him to dial it back a little bit, make sure it's only whistle to whistle, nothing more than that. But when this Toronto team was good, you know, he was a big part of it. And, you know, he's bounced around a little bit. It's been a little harder to find a place. But I can see why Trotz wanted to get him. I absolutely can see why Trotz was interested in him as a player. You know, with Shen, I don't know what criticism you're referring to.
It's the fact that Shen was traded in the deal, right? And you were on with us after that, so you had your assessment. But then the next day, of course, at the deadline, Winnipeg was able to, or the Pittsburgh was able to get two draft picks for Shen. And so it made Trotz look like he maybe didn't get the full value he could have for Shen when he got when the Jets traded a second and a fourth to Pittsburgh to get him.
Well, I'll say this. I think there was quite a bit of interest in him. Like, I know Toronto was trying to get Shen because I think they wanted to try to unite the Shen brothers. I don't know how likely that was going to be at the end of the day, but I do think they talked about it. You know, only Barry Trotz knows what was offered to him. You know, all I'll just say is that I think the one thing that could be very interesting is, like, these are the trade trees now, right? And we know that Shen could have gone for a second and a fourth. Let's see what Bunting does in Nashville, or let's see what happens if Nashville trades Bunting. I'll say this. I'm not surprised that he was interested in him because, like I said, he's been a good player on good teams, and he drives people nuts. And I think that all of you would say that that's something that's been missing a little bit from Nashville this year.
Elliot, I want to ask you about Steven Stamkos. He's now moved up the ladder a couple of spots with a good stretch of games here. He's got 5 goals in the last 4 games, and he's now tied with Mark Recchi, who I didn't even realize, because Recchi traveled around the league a bunch of times late in his career, but he actually made a stop in Tampa when he was a 40-year-old with a very young Steven Stamkos. So Stamkos and Recchi have the same amount of goals. He passed Mike Bossy earlier this year. But one of the things that I've had a couple of interesting conversations, and he was on our show earlier today with Stamkos, and I caught up with him in San Jose, is trying to remain a productive player into your mid to late 30s. He's watching Alex Ovechkin, Sidney Crosby, and he said that really resonates with him, admiring how they stay top level even into their upper 30s. That's what he's facing going forward. And Mark Recchi's an interesting guy. Like, he's got 577 goals largely because he just played forever, right? He played until he was 42 years old and still chipped in on winning teams. So that's a great challenge and a vision. And Stamkos maybe has the pathway with guidance that he's had from guys like Recchi and Gary Roberts and guys like that.
Well, I'll say this about Stamkos. First of all, it's good to hear Mike Bossy's name. There's probably not a lot of people down there are familiar with Mike Bossy, but he hit the league when I was 8 years old, and he never scored less than 50 goals a year until he got hurt. And I know, like, Ovechkin's about to pass Gretzky. I'll say this, like, up in that conversation, like, Mike Bossy is one of the best, is among the greatest goal scorers this game has ever seen. And, you know, I'll tell you a quick story about him. Like, when he was a player, he was really brash. And I met him years later as a broadcaster, and he was such a great guy. He said to me, "I've mellowed a lot." But I remember Kelly Rudy, my coworker, who played goal for the Islanders when he broke in, he used to tell great stories about Bossy at practice. Like, there would be guys who'd come up from the minors and like, they wouldn't put it right on his, they wouldn't give him a good enough pass. Like, they wouldn't put it on his tape, his stick tape. And Bossy would tell them, "Hey, if you can't put this on my tape, we'll find somebody else who will. Like Kelly said, it was like the craziest thing. Like this, the guy was so demanding of himself and demanding of others. Anyway, sorry for going off track, but you know, Stamkos, you know, first of all, he's always taken great care of himself. He works out. He takes really good care of his body. Like the reason that it took him longer than maybe some other guys to get to this, to get there time wise, was all the injuries he had. And it wasn't because he didn't take care of himself or he wasn't very particular about his training. So I think whenever you have someone like that, there's always a chance that it can extend longer and longer. I think the other thing is this year, like, you know, Willie, Adam, like you guys have seen this all year. It's a kick in the teeth for these guys. Like I'm sure Stamkos, you know, it's just the shock of what happened. The way this season started, like before his recent hot streak, what he hadn't had a point in 15 games or something like that, that's not Steven Stamkos. And I bet he's a really nice guy. He's so classy to deal with and a pleasure to deal with. But like this year, it stings, right? It really stings. It stings everyone. And I guarantee to you that he's looking at this hot streak now and he's looking forward and he's saying, you know what? This is not going to happen again. This is not the way that this is going to be. And I bet like a lot of players, and I'm really curious to see how this offseason is going to go for Nashville, but like a lot of players, I think he's going to come back next year and say, you know what? Like, we're erasing the memory of that.
Real quick, Elliot, before we let you go. It does really look, now that the Tommy Novak era is over and the Predators are looking at a young kid like Fedor Svechkov, who they really feel like still has a lot of growing to do. He flashes brilliance at times, and he's got the makeup, I think, that they really like. But I'm not sure he's ready to be a number two center next year behind Ryan O'Reilly. So finding another center is so difficult. What does it look like? Does it look like any viable center solutions could be out there on the free agent market as we sit here right now?
Well, I mean, the number one free agent this year right now still on the market is not a wing. It's not a center. It's a winger, right? That's Mitch Marner. And so the number one offensive player who's out there is that guy. I mean, you know, I'll say this, like when you take a look at centers, there's going to be guys like Sam Bennett, who right now is unsigned and it doesn't appear likely that he's going to find a deal in Florida. Things can always change, but it looks like he's going to hit the market. There's Brock Nelson, who just got traded from the Islanders to Colorado. And, you know, barring something, you know, he's going to hit the market. I mean, there's some older guys like John Tavares. I think it's most likely he stays in Toronto. Claude Giroux, I think it's most likely he stays in Ottawa. I mean, your old buddy Michael Granlund, you know, he's out there. But when you're looking for centers, like another old buddy of yours, Matt Duchene, who I think Dallas wants to keep him, when you're looking at top-end offensive centers, like there's a couple of really good depth guys available, but the two best offense, the best, most impactful players are probably Nelson and Bennett. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, Brock's a little older. He's going to be 34 in October. So you're probably looking at a 3-4 year deal for him, maybe 5 if you want to get him. Sam Bennett's 29. He's going to want a big deal. This is probably his last big contract. So I think with those kinds of guys, like you're really going to have to be bidding against a lot of big teams there. Like, you know, Ryan Donato's had a really good year in Chicago. Like, do you think he can handle that? You know, that's going to be a question there, but there's not a ton of high-end offensive guys. And I could see like a guy like Tavares, even if he didn't sign in Toronto, like one of the things the Predators have talked about is their foot speed, right? And Tavares, as great a player as he is, he's not going to solve that problem. So unless you're getting one of those two guys we talked about, you're probably looking at the trade market again.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, presented by Old National Bank. Get old on D-Maze, Fingan, and Donick. Elliot, great stuff as always. Try to put your phone down for at least a few minutes. Can you do that for me, please?
I am going to attempt that right now.
Thank you, Elliot. Great stuff as always. Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. During the segment with Elliot Freeman, we have discovered the identity of the Titans' backup quarterback. According to Mike Garafolo, the Titans have agreed to terms with quarterback Brandon Allen on a one-year deal. Allen, the 49ers backup to Brock Purdy last year, reunites with Brian Callahan, his OC, when both were with the Bengals. So Brandon Allen signed by the Tennessee Titans on a one-year deal. We will react to that. Also, a quick score update in the SEC tournament as I lose that page on my computer. By the way, although Duke did pull it out without Cooper Flagg, they defeat Georgia Tech 78-70. All eyes are on the status of Cooper Flagg. Ole Miss up 51-48 with 13:44 remaining in the second half. 51-48 Ole Miss against Arkansas in the SEC second round opener. We will react to the signing of Brandon Allen coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.